This is Melissa, and today is the 2nd of June, 2024. I hope that you're all surviving okay. I heard from three people this week who reminded me of the Truth Hurts shows that Alan did. 5 hours of interviews there, and there was a solo spot where Alan subbed in for the host there, Charles Giuliani. And that's the one that I'm going to play today, August the 10th, 2007. I just figure if three different people tell me that it's worth revisiting, I'm going to do that. And I listened to this one, and I really liked the way that Alan covers the basics. I think he did that a lot in the early years because he was a newer presence in the Truth/Patriot radio scene, and he wanted to really take his time and explain to listeners this ancient system as he saw it, and, you know, based on his research and his own observations and thinking. And so this is a good one for that reason. He very clearly lays out a lot of important things. I always think, you know, maybe in his words, I'll repeat that for the hard of thinking. But I do think it is a good idea to get back to basics from time to time. It's so easy to get caught up in the news, or what they call the news cycle. And that's deliberate. It's by design. There's lots of scary things that happen, and tragedies, and things that could make you angry if you allow them to. And it is important to remind ourselves to take that bird's eye view, get up above the fray, and see what's going on, and to our own satisfaction, try to understand that these are high sciences that are being used on us. Emotional manipulation, fear. It's psychological warfare in the form of news. I wanted to cover just a little bit of the news, not in any kind of depth, but just to touch on some things that I have seen this week. And I think the first is a story that the U.S. Congress has invited Benjamin Netanyahu to deliver an address at the U.S. Capitol. It said congressional leaders have invited Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to deliver an address at the Capitol, a show of wartime support for the longtime ally, despite mounting political divisions over Israel's military assault on Gaza. This is interesting because just last week I talked about the International Criminal Court pursuing arrest warrants for Netanyahu and also the leaders of Hamas. And just a couple of days ago, Joe Biden said that enough is enough. He said it's time for this war to end. And he tells Hamas, to accept Israel's hostage ceasefire offer. I'll post a couple of articles. You can read it for yourself. But evidently, this proposal has three phases. And the first phase is going to be a complete and immediate ceasefire and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from all populated areas of Gaza. Then they're going to take their time and hash it out. This could take 6 weeks or longer to do that, but the ceasefire will last as long as necessary, as long as it's necessary for them to hash out the terms of peace, right? It mentioned again something that I had told you, that this would be releasing hostages. And it just caught my attention when I read this a few weeks ago, that they had started off asking for, Israel had started off asking for the release of 40 hostages, and then settled on that they would be okay with the release of 33. And that again factors into the articles that are being written up right now with Biden's insistence that this ceasefire happen immediately. In recent weeks, Israel has demanded the release of 33 female elderly and wounded hostages who are still alive in Gaza. And Hamas claimed that it did not have that many living hostages in those categories. So we'll see. Remember that, 33. Alan, in this talk, he goes into the media, who they are. He said, well, somebody called in to have a question with him, a discussion. And Alan said, the media is an essential arm of government. And then he talked about them being the fourth estate based on the three estates that you get with the way that medieval government was organized in, say, England and other parts of Europe. And Alan mentions them as the heavenly, the temporal, and the ministerial. These are often referred to, the heavenly would be the clergy, and the temporal would be nobility. And the third category would be commoners, wage laborers in the city or urban areas, and the peasants in the countryside. But the fourth estate, or the media, it got that term because it is part of the power, or part of what keeps the government in power. And when I look at the news, I try not to fall into an emotional position on something, even stories that I read that are so disgusting, and you'll have that disgust reaction to the story. But I try to read it understanding that emotional manipulation is at play, that oftentimes the stories are they're generated more for those in the know as a form of communication. So when I see 33 used, I just, for my own self, I think, oh, that could be a little bit of a, you know, out in the open communication going on there. It's an interesting thing to pay attention to. So elsewhere in the news, Donald Trump was convicted on all 34 counts that he was charged with. And so this is felony conviction. Now, they're still saying that he can run for presidency, and who knows what will happen. This could drag on for a while. But this is what is being described as a historic guilty verdict. And I kind of, you know, had a smile to myself in weeks past when I saw that it was 34 felony charges, and I wondered why they couldn't have dropped one of those charges to make it a nice tidy 33. But I sort of got some satisfaction yesterday when I saw some news coverage that Donald Trump spoke after the verdict was delivered. He spoke for 33 minutes. He said, they're destroying our country. We're living in a fascist state. So this is described in various papers as a rambling, angry, meandering, but 33-minute speech. Just interesting. It doesn't really mean anything, except I do believe that things are being communicated that we ought to pay attention to. Also today, I saw this in the headlines, and this was a real grabber. This is the Birmingham Mail. It's a UK newspaper. So here's a grabber of a headline for you. People dropping down dead with COVID 3 years after getting virus. Okay, so that's a real grabber. A COVID warning has been issued as people, quote, drop down dead, end quote, 3 years after getting the virus. Patients hospitalized within 30 days after infection face a 29% higher risk of death 3 years later compared with those not infected. Now, it tells you that these are researchers from Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis and the Veterans Affairs St. Louis Healthcare System. And then it mentions the paper that was done, the study that was done. But in typical new journalism style, it doesn't link to the study. It doesn't say who published the study. And I just thought, well, there's nothing here. They don't give us anything to go on. And the age of these people who are dropping down dead, the vaccination status of these people, what we were all told over and over in the early days of COVID, the comorbidity. So we get none of that. And so I kept digging a little bit. I found the article, similar article again in Fortune magazine, and it said COVID can cause new health problems to appear years after infection, according to a study of more than 130,000 patients. This one actually linked to the paper that was published May 30 in Nature magazine. And I got there the lead author of the study. His name is Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, a clinical epidemiologist at Washington University in St. Louis. So I thought, okay, there I've got something to go on. I could actually look at the study, and I did pull it up. But again, what was interesting to me is that the study itself doesn't give, it didn't give me those questions, it didn't answer those questions that I had, which is what type of people were you looking at? What was their overall health condition? Had they been, for instance, hospitalized the first time they had COVID? Did they have that? Were they vaccinated or unvaccinated? Those weren't part of the study. It just said severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2 infection causes post-acute sequelae of coronavirus disease 2019, COVID-19, in many organ systems. I'll post this for you. So that is, just keep that person's name in your head, Ziad Al-Ali. He was the lead author of the study. So I kept going with my news scouring, and I saw that Joe Biden has done a 180, and he had initially said that no U.S. weapons supplied to Ukraine could be fired into Russia. But he has reversed that and said it is okay for Ukraine to fire U.S.-made, U.S.-manufactured weapons into Russia. So I had 33 on the brain. I just did a little bit of a search to see if the number 33 had come up in relation to Ukraine and Biden. And it did. This has been a couple of years, but this would have been an initial round of funding in the early days of this current phase of the war. Biden's $33 billion supplemental funding request for Ukraine. 33 on the brain, I just kept going with that. I thought, well, let's put in 33,300, 33,000, whatever, with COVID. Let's call it COVID patients and do a search for it. And I have to tell you, I mean, I just got tired of looking them up because there were so many. This one is from July of 2021. And it says, hospitalizations have increased by more than a third since last week, when just over 33,000 coronavirus patients were hospitalized. And here is one from the New York Times in October of 2022. And this is about a study out of Scotland. And I saw that this one referred to some 33,000. The Scottish study tracked 33,000 people who had tested positive for the virus starting in April 2020. So I scrolled through that article and I came upon a name that I had just learned. He, Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, said the beauty of this study is they have a control group and they can isolate the proportion of symptomatology that is attributable to COVID infection. So here is 2022, and this Dr. Al-Ali is tracking what they have called long COVID, and it's a constellation of problems. This is a White House briefing from July of 2021, and this is from the CDC. And Dr. Walensky from the CDC reported more than 33,000 new cases of COVID-19. So I think that referred back to the Forbes article that I just mentioned. Okay, all right. So I'm just getting that in stereo, so to speak. But this is a different article from 2022. This is from the University of Arizona. And this is just for the state of Arizona. After 33,000 COVID-19 deaths, many Arizonans struggle with mental health. Okay, this one is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, so the state of Milwaukee, and this is from March of 2024. They were citing something not from their state, but the 3 million COVID-19 cases and 33,000 deaths in New Jersey between March 2020 and May 2023. And then I see something else from September of 2021. Pharmacy students help administer 33,000 COVID vaccines and counting. And this is from the Veteran Affairs, the Rocky Mountain Network. This is Rocky Mountain Network is Colorado. This is February 2021. Over 33,000 COVID-19 vaccinations and counting. Wow, well, this is just kind of bizarre, isn't it? I found some articles for just 330 people were admitted to the hospital today. I thought, what happens if I type in 666? Well, I found a paper from the NIH PubMed. Prevalence of mucocutaneous manifestations in 666 patients with COVID-19 in a field hospital in Spain. All right. Arizona, again, 2020, November. Hospitals report uptick in COVID-19 patients as Arizona adds 666 new cases. Now, some of you might remember that the Congress in the U.S. passed their H.R. 6666, which is the COVID-19 Testing, Reaching, and Contacting Everyone Act, TRACE Act. Alan covered this quite a bit, and I noticed that all of the debunkers jumped on this right away. It doesn't mean anything. There's, you know, you're just crazy conspiracy theorists. Here's one also from the NIH PubMed. Effective increasing doses of colchicine on the treatment of 333 COVID-19 inpatients. And this is from July of 2021. Heart-wrenching inside a hospital grappling with Delta and vaccine hesitancy. This is Tennessee. Vaccine hesitancy is causing the uptick in patients. Upwards of 3,300 COVID patients statewide. Boulder, Colorado. COVID-19 vaccine update, January 7, 2021. 3,300 vaccinations administered. What hospitals and workers need to fight coronavirus, from the New York Times. As coronavirus, this is 2020, March 27. As coronavirus infections accumulate across America, hospitals are facing new urgency to keep their workers safe. In China, where the virus was first discovered, protecting healthcare workers was a serious challenge. More than 3,300 nurses, doctors, and other hospital staff members across the country were infected, many because of insufficient protective equipment. Here is one from Bengaluru, India. This is July 26, 2020. Over 3,300 coronavirus patients go missing in Bengaluru. They had forged details during sample collection. Okay. I saw that CVS Pharmacy in the States was doing COVID testing at their locations, and I kid you not, three different locations at the 3,300 block came up. Now, I just had to check the CVS in the town next to me, and it's not in the 3,300 block, so evidently the pharmacy can build somewhere other than the 3,300 block, but it's kind of interesting. This is from the government of Pennsylvania. Frequently asked questions for COVID-19 recovery. This is PEMA, which is their state version of FEMA. So this is the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency. So PEMA is telling different businesses in the state of Pennsylvania what they need to do in order to qualify for some kind of reimbursement here. It's called Survey 123, and there's some information about Survey 123. The expenses that they reimburse you for are up to $3,300. And so there's a question on the FAQ page, the question and answer page. Can one submit expenses in excess of $3,300? Yes, they can. The first submission must be over $3,300 based on a time period. These things, I don't know. What do they mean? Do they mean anything? I don't know. Probably not. Or maybe they mean a lot. To me, it means that, as Alan said in this talk, nothing that we are given at our level is the truth. And a caller called into him and wanted to talk about, you know, what is reality? The caller said, I'd like to play a bit of devil's advocate. I'd say that to the contrary, that perception is reality, because Alan is talking about how your perceptions are altered. And reality in quotation marks, because what reality is a very, very extensive study. And so he quotes Kant and the self and the ego and the id and so forth. And I thought that Alan's handling of that question was very interesting. So listen carefully there. I wish that he would have had time. The conversation took another turn, which was also interesting. But when Alan's talking about Kant, he's talking about the submersion of the individual into the mass under the pretense that you could never understand everything, so give up your will to a god or a deity. And he said Kantian philosophy came after that with the same basic idea. That is such an important thing. I just got to hammer it home again. What is Alan talking about? How important the individual is. You don't get your individuality by confirming your own perceptions and your own understandings and thoughts by the mainstream media. That is submersion into the mass. And it's kind of funny because Alan goes on to talk about the Marshall McLuhan. That's the famous, the medium is the message. Alan had said that the Marshall McLuhan Center was heavily used by the CIA. And the caller said, just a minute, Alan, I happen to be a Canadian and I read Marshall as a young man. I'm sure this happened, if it did, after his death. And Alan said, even during his life. And the caller said, are you saying that Marshall McLuhan was a CIA operative or agent? Alan said, not an operative, but they also got funding. Okay, so you can listen to that whole conversation for yourselves coming up right away. But I just want to point out to you, the caller is defending his human God, as it were, First of all, he's Canadian, so is Marshall McLuhan. That means that Marshall McLuhan gets extra credibility in his eyes. He read Marshall when he was a young man. That gives him even more credibility. It just, you know, what he said to Alan is, what you're saying just can't be, right? So if you can let go of the idea that the politicians and the media personalities are somehow your betters and what they say is so important, and get into a place where you're training up your own ability to look at what you're seeing and think for yourself about it. But the important thing is the bird's eye view, because as Alan said in this talk, everything is put out there for us. Ancient control system. I wanted to say that there's going to be an extra real history upcoming this week. I recorded two last week. One, the person was not really familiar with Alan's work, and I think a lot of you will find this to be an interesting conversation. It's a long one. It's a bonus. I don't know when I'll have it illustrated and up to go, but sometime, I'd say in the next week, there will be two real histories instead of one. And I mention that not just to let you know about it, but because as interesting as the conversation was for me, and Alan was aware of this person's work, they had come to different conclusions about who's at the top, who's in control, the elite, psychopathy, the money system, etc. Some overlap, but some real differences. And that was one of the, that conversation that I had was one of the reasons why I wanted to really get back to the basics with Alan. And I hope you enjoy this. And everybody take care and have a good week.
I'm Alan Watts, and I'm filling in for Charles Giuliani today. You've heard me on and off over the last couple of weeks, filling in for different people. And I do this on other radio broadcasters as well, other shows, other networks. I'd like to talk a little bit today about a show I did last night, late at night. It finished at midnight, in fact, Eastern Standard Time. I perceived that the host, I think a younger fellow, still didn't quite catch on to the fact that the politicians, with their acting, really were not in charge. And so I was filling him in on different bits of history to try and show him the bigger picture of this big matrix we live in. And that's exactly what it is. It's a matrix where nothing goes by chance in the system, nothing on a big scale. Everything in the system takes many years of planning, and we are, in fact, under a form of total control. A total control which has been written about copiously over many, many years, in fact, going back into the 1800s especially, by authorized authors. That's why they're called authors. They're authorized, as all authors used to be, by the crown, by those in charge, to write a particular version, a spin on what has happened in the past in history, and also as to where is to go in the future. The trick of the authors was always to reinforce the mythology, the big myth that we just evolve day by day, and that those in charge just have sudden meetings and deal with crises as they happen. That was the trick of convincing the public of the big lie, because in reality, huge think tanks, specialized think tanks, plan the future. Each part has a specialization to do with part of society and sociology, even in the culture creation industry, which is very important to this. And they market their plans into each generation, which adopts them, which adopts all of these plans, thinking that we're just evolving day by day, never suspecting that the major events in your lifetime, including the wars, are actually planned before you're born, generally. long-term goals, long-term plans. Those who have worked amongst bureaucrats on higher levels, even in the federal governments, are the first to tell you and admit that nothing moves swiftly inside the government or the bureaucracies. They have meetings upon meetings about singular items, and then they redraft them, and it goes back for more meetings, and for each little part of an agenda. And that takes a long, long time. So when you see something happening on a world scale where you have governments all working together, and that's the key, implementing the same big agenda at the same time, you know there's been cooperation, and it's been going on long before you were born. I'll be back in a few moments. Alan Watt, standing in for Charles Giuliani. You can look into my own website. It's called cuttingthroughthematrix.com. I am not in this area of work because I particularly enjoy it. And I'm not in this area of work because it makes money. I am not in the game of making money as for a business, in fact. The way I look at the world is rather different from most people, including many of the listeners, I'm sure. I can trace the root of money, not just as being the root of all evil, but it literally is the roots of all the system that's brought this world into play, the world that we know of commerce and armies and taxation and produce and consume. It's a world that's created into an inhumane world of winners and losers, as we like to call them, especially in the West. We have lost our humanity through the greed and the corruption that comes with a moneyed system. The moneyed system works on basic fears, fears which were understood and observed by high priests in ancient times, long before history has been given to the public, or this history of civilization, as I like to call it, long before Sumer. In fact, Sumer did not create it. It simply reinstalled a system that had existed before under the Hurrians, who ran the ancient, most ancient world of commerce and business. A system where they weighed the money out, primarily silver and then gold. They weighed it out because money and coinage didn't come into existence until around 800 BC. Those who controlled the money, a substitute for real wealth, eventually decided how much that money would be worth. In other words, they took over ancient economies. They got countries into debt. I write about this in my third book, which you can find on my website. They actually gave money to kings and cultures, mostly tribal cultures in ancient times, and started off the debt rackets. They then would come in when bankruptcy was declared and install their own advisors. We still have the same today because the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada, in fact, consist basically of advisors put there by the money lenders themselves. This happened to all the ancient countries except Sparta. Sparta went to war for over a century against these bankers and eventually lost, because as you fight the system, you become like the system. You become your enemy, in fact, and corruption sets in. Money runs through fear. It creates fear, fear of poverty, loneliness, ill health, and no treatment. We see this especially in the medical systems of today in the West, where once your insurance runs out, you're handed off to the charitable institutions, where you're given palliative care until you die, or else you're tossed out on the street. And we say this is progress. We call it progress towards a higher society, a higher civilization, yet we never ask, what is the definition of progress? Whose definition is it, in fact? It's a very inhumane system, which is getting worse. Since about World War II, the notches were stepped up a few from what it had been before with the family unit, even though that system itself was put in place by the same controllers' families. The same culture was given to us then to keep the family unit together when they had to breed people for factories. They wanted you to take care of your children who would grow up and go into those factories and go into the militaries, which would be sent abroad to conquer other parts of the world. With the global agenda, we come to the end of this long, long history of takeovers, because that's what wars are. They're takeovers of other nations. You have corporate takeovers through business, the legal system, and you also have war, which is a continuation of business under a different guise. All historians know this, at least the better ones. At the global agenda, the whole world is to be transformed into a more efficient system. The family unit is now defunct, according to the elites. It serves no purpose. And they won't need massive populations working in factories, including China, because the populations of the world are to be reduced drastically. This is not a wish that they have. It's a goal that they have, and we better get that very clear in our minds. We're not dealing with wish fulfillers here. These guys make goals and make it happen. And they are so confident today they can pull it off step by step, because they have very advanced sciences and have had people working on the most horrible types of diseases and weaponry you can imagine. In fact, you can't imagine just how far ahead they really are. They're so confident today that they've planned the next million years, according to Charles Galton Darwin, the grandson of Charles Darwin, who wrote a book in the 1950s called The Next Million Years, on behalf of this world elite, where he talked about the need to cull off all the useless eaters, because there would be no factories for them to work in. They wouldn't keep people alive just for the sake of keeping you alive. You would have to have a purpose to fulfill in this new world order. In fact, he said, you wouldn't be allowed to be born unless they had a role for you to fill. That's the planned system. We started off with the planned family planning, which actually meant abortion. And we just went on from there to global planning, which means global genocide. Terrible thing to contemplate, but I think we better do it very quickly, since the elite have contemplated this very thing for a couple of centuries and written about it. We've watched the hype of scientists training us, you know, the expert class, on television, over the years, in association with the fictional movies like Outbreak, all to terrify us and condition us through programming of the inevitability of coming plagues. And every scientist who comes on from these institutes on bacteriology or virology today tells the same thing. Oh, it's just around the corner. It's inevitable, they say. How strange that all the predictions tie in with plans which they published a long time ago. Vast population reductions for this utopia of the elite, where there will be no individual thinkers left to cause them any problems. Every one of the great philosophers in recent times at major universities like Toynbee, who trained Rhodes Scholars, talked about this agenda. They're all elitist. They believe truly in their plans. They believed in their right to dictate the course of the world and everyone in it. And they wrote copiously about it. You can get Toynbee's volumes on history right up to the present. You know, I think it was about 15-volume set, in fact, where he talks about these agendas and the necessity of bringing down the world's populations, because in a post-industrial society and a post-technological society, they wouldn't need all the useless eaters anymore. They would just be consumers, and that's bad for the earth. They would take away the resources which the elite's families would need for their coming generations to survive for the next few thousand years. Very arrogant, very open, and the reason they get away with this in these kinds of statements and publications is because the public go into disbelief. We cannot believe that human beings could do these kind of things, plan these kind of things and actually implement them, pull them off. The reason we can't is because the average person can understand a little lie or a little deception, but they could never imagine planning wars or genocides to fulfill some big agenda. It's not in our psyche because we're not psychopaths, you see. What is interesting, though, is that even the psychopath on the street level, who's very streetwise, has no problem understanding the elite. The only problem the psychopath at that level has is that he's not born into the families with power to implement these agendas. That's the difference. So he generally is recruited on a lower level into one of the, you know, the new classes of professions, like being a torturer for the governments, one of those types of classes, or given a machine gun and told he's in special forces, go off and kill these people. That's where they get the recruits from at the bottom. And unfortunately today, we have lots of them in every country. The Holy Loch in Scotland, this big lake where the nuclear submarines go into from the United States all through the Cold War, and no doubt still today, did a documentary special with the BBC. They showed you the two people who would always turn the keys to start off the fail-safe mechanisms for setting loose the atomic warfare weaponry. The interviewer asked the commandant of the base, the station commander, how they picked these guys and how could they be sure they'd actually go through with it when it was a real thing. And the commander said, it's they're predictable. He says they're psychopaths. And he named the tests that were given by the military to pick them for their particular positions. And that's a scary thought. A scary thought that the military use tests to seek out the psychopaths for special jobs. Jobs which would perhaps break a normal person with a normal conscience. But they seek out those who have no conscience. Because a psychopath will only please his master and do whatever he's told by someone with more power than himself. That's all he respects, is power, you see. That's the history of psychopathy. With the elite themselves and all of the helpers of the elite, including those that you'll see in the visible spectrum to the public eye, they're also psychopaths who respect those above them with more power. Back in a few minutes after these messages. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, filling in for Charles Giuliani. You'll find me at Cutting Through the Matrix. There's a lot of material there which you can download for free for those who want to buy the books and the DVDs and the MP3s are for sale. Please go ahead. I need the money to keep going. I hate even having to say that, in fact, because I don't like money personally. I think we need a different way altogether, but certainly not the way of the elite, because they plan to do away with money in the long term and give us credits from the government. Credits which you cannot save up, we'll have to use, and credits which will also be withheld for social disapproval if you go against the system. This has been written about by some of the big boys, the big players, the top think tanks, long ago. I'm talking about different parts of this matrix we live in, the world that we think is normal simply because we're born into it, and everything exists in its present form. A world where our parents didn't know enough to warn us about the tricks and the con games that go on. Therefore, the teachers, the state, as they said they would, has taken over the role of the parents. And the parents' input is of very little value today to the children. They're taught not to listen to parents. We also have all the sciences working against us. A world of experts, you see, as Bertrand Russell said they would bring in. He actually quipped in one of his offhand remarks that the time would come when a woman would be unable to change a diaper on her own child without the advice of an expert. And you know, it's happened. It's actually happened. It's also happened that most people today can't even cook for themselves in the cities. They don't know how. They need experts to tell them, or books put out by experts. Something as basic to survival as that, they can't do. Experts guide our lives. They tell us what to think and what to wear, what our opinions should be. And we never question them. We never question their motives either. Psychiatry has been one of the greatest tools, beginning in the 20th century, to manipulate whole populations into what's now a new normal. Freud started this off, basically. He was paid to do so, fronted to do so, made famous like all famous stars are. Just like Darwin was made famous. No one had heard of Darwin. The media made him a superstar before his book was even published. That's how you create stars. Same happened with Freud. And psychiatrists, including psychoanalysts, have painted the picture of a normal personality, which is never terribly sad and never terribly angry or never too excited. Then they use words like infantile or neurotic to denounce certain traits or types of personalities that don't conform with the conventional pattern of a normal individual. When you think of this kind of influence, isn't this in a way more dangerous than the older, honest form of name-calling? Because that's all it is. It's name-calling. Then, of course, then when you were called a name, the individual knew at least there was some person or some doctrine which criticized him, and he could fight back, but you can't fight back against science, you see. It's science. So how can you have a world of billions of people and yet we're all supposed to conform to one personality type? This is what we're taught by science, what is normal. We saw the same thing with the Kinsey report. Kinsey was put up there again as a superstar. And he wasn't the first one to be put up, because in pre-Nazi Germany, during the Roaring Twenties, there was a German put up in front there to do the same thing, to bring sex to the fore. Even had a museum of sexual perversions, this particular guy, to try and standardize all of this as being normal for everyone. And to make people think, if you're not into this, there's something wrong with you. Well, eventually, they were all kicked out of Germany. And a lot of them went to the US, in fact. Then they came up with Kinsey, the same darn thing. In the United States, well-financed by the big foundations, the Rockefellers and the rest of them. And his job was to make everyone on the planet, especially women, think that if they weren't going around with 1,000 guys per year, doing all kinds of weird and odd things, there must be something wrong with them. The idea being to destroy, once again, the family unit and tradition. Tradition had to be completely destroyed to bring in the new, according to the master builders at the top. And they did this very well with unlimited financing and with unlimited media attention, constantly spouting this nonsense. It isn't until years later, once they changed all the system, and remembering his books were used in courts of law, judges would refer to his books in special cases and use that as a ground of law. We find out later it was all bogus. He hired prostitutes to do all his studies on anything but the average individual. Back after these messages. Alan Watt, filling in for Charles Giuliani. Look into my site, Cutting Through the Matrix, on much, much more of these topics, going into more depth, in fact, to do with how culture is used, altered, made to be fluid, in fact, and reshaped into new directions. Plato, the philosopher of ancient times, a member of the ancient societies, the secret societies of his day, of the aristocracy, talked about culture creation in great detail, and how that even in his time, no culture, no cultural change was allowed to come from the grassroots. It all had to be come down from the top down, be authorized. Anything from the grassroots that wasn't in the plan of the elite could have disastrous consequences, because it would have ripple effects which were unforeseen. That's why, even during the Cold War, and I wondered about this when I was young, I knew that the communists had implemented a department of culture. And I thought, why would you do that? Why would you have a department, a governmental department of culture, if you, the people, were the culture? Then when I looked into Britain and all the other European countries, and Canada even, they all had the same things, departments of culture. Why would you fund departments of culture? And then when you look into what they actually do, you find the biggest authors that write about the quaint little stories of your past or your peoples and so on are all paid by the Department of Culture to give a specific, generally false idea of the remote or recent past. They also dish out the grants to the so-called budding artists, you know, the ones who make odd things out of metal look very ugly, and they call it some particular name, and an art museum or some public works place will put outside a building. That's what they fund, the nihilistic programs, nihilism being essential when you want to break the ties with the past or normalcy of any kind. It puts you into a fluid state, a psychic state, and this is part of the techniques of mind control through rapid change. We've now got evidence from declassified documentation from London and the US, Washington DC, and the Pentagon, that they were heavily involved with the departments of culture creation for every country. And they funded all of the what we thought were left-wing groups. The idea being, if they made left-wing groups which are more radical than any left-wing group, then they would lead all the left-wingers. And that's how simple it was. They did this. And they funded these artists. They also funded a lot of the music industry as well, which gave you, especially during the 1980s, that nihilistic Lost Boy type image with the wailing sounds. It was meant to create a depressing sort of ambience for a depressed era where there was no hope. Generation X, they called them. These are the ones that wouldn't have work or steady work in their lifetime. They were written off. X. That's why they were called X, you see. Nothing in this world is as is presented to us. According to the elite who call us all the profane, those in the darkness. That's why their symbol is Moloch, the big owl, you see. An owl sees in the dark. We don't. We take the world as it's been presented to us from birth. We don't question. In fact, we're not given any clues as to why we should even question. Who would suspect getting born into this world that everything around you was one big lie? But that's how it is, you see. That's the tragedy of the existence we live through. It's also The Matrix. The movie was modeled after this, these very topics which I'm talking about right now. The Matrix was a computerized system, a system where everything that happened to the characters involved already had programmed events built into them. Every possible maneuver you could make was pre-thought, like a great chessboard. The only difference is with us, the profane, you see, you don't even know you're on the chessboard. You don't even know there's a game being planned and that it's actually played and you're on it, you're in it, and you're a pawn. Those who ask for truth and phone me up will be very sincere, but I'll tell them off the bat, do you really want the truth? Because you cannot just open Pandora's box and close it again. Once that light's hit you, you will never be the same again. Your opinions, your ideas, your ideals will be drastically forever altered, and you will never be able to go back to sleep in the same way. Opening Pandora's box means you will have to act in your life. You'll have to do things in your life. If you don't, the knowledge would turn against you and actually destroy you. Many people, young people, were very bright, the ones who've escaped the side effects of their inoculations, which are meant to dumb them down, will turn to drink or drugs. The real thinkers will see too much but they've no one to fill in all the blanks for them and explain it to them. So they start blaming themselves as to why they cannot get on in this society. In fact, they don't really want to get on in this society. They don't want to become a good, successful killer-type person and climb over others to get to the top. And so they turn inward on themselves with the knowledge they have and try to self-destruct. So I always tell the young ones, if you want, I'll teach you how to get out of this. I'll teach you how to become constructive with your thoughts and how to become active with your thoughts and your way of living and how to teach other people, because we're at a critical time now. This is the last generation who'll be able to talk and say and convey and pass on the wisdom that's been passed on right now. The ones coming up will have had the biggest doses of inoculations than any generation before, inoculations which have targeted their immune systems and, in fact, their higher critical thinking abilities. It's only those now who have the knowledge and who have lived long enough who can pass this wisdom on. And that will be forbidden very shortly. The bills that were passed, at least the executive orders that were passed recently in the United States and other countries, are now getting rather heavy. They want to confiscate the property and assets of anyone speaking out against this war agenda of the government. The same technique that was used in the Soviet Union is now being used here. In the Soviet Union, they called it anti-government propaganda. Anyone accused of it lost all they had. And those who seized their property, the police forces, the military forces, etc., sold it off and split the loot. The same laws that we already have in the Western world. Because the Soviet model was the trial bed. That was a big laboratory, which were to be used on a much larger scale, the scale of the whole world, in fact. Mikhail Gorbachev, when he was still the president of the Soviet Union, gave his last speech to the Politburo, which has been published. You'll find it if you go back into the archives of the Toronto Sun, under Eric Margolis, who was the reporter. Read that speech, because he said to the Politburo, "You will shortly hear of the end of communism. Don't believe it," he said. "We're moving on to the next phase." The next phase, of course, is the merger with capitalism, which it was intended to do from the very outset. He said the end result would be something not quite communist and not quite capitalist. What he was referring to was a system of fascism at the top, with the bulk of the populace run by a bureaucracy of in a communist type manner. That's what we have now. That is the UN agenda. The United Nations was set up to take over eventually as a form of global governments. So the young people should stop beating their heads against the brick wall and wondering why they're so lonely. They can't get relationships because everyone now is dysfunctional. They're trying to emulate a style that's gone out of style. It's old-fashioned, it's gone, because the genders have been under attack for 100 years or more to split them up, to make sure that the family unit could not survive. Government wants to be able to talk directly down to you as the individual with a television screen in your house one day, telling you what to do. And you look around for those around you, your friends, relatives, to come around and stand beside you. Well, they won't be there. They won't be there. That is why they had to destroy the family unit, because the family unit is still the embryo, the last vestige of a tribal unit. It gives people cause to stand up for other things and perhaps sometimes disobey government. The same type of inconvenience they found with the religions, which had served the elite so well for thousands of years to make the people obey, but the religion still had something in it which they couldn't dispose of completely, and that was that You had the choice, ultimately, of obeying a tyrant king or obeying your God. And that was a real nuisance to the elite, so they had to destroy religion too. It had served its purpose well for the majority, but it still had that little embryo there, that little spark of disobedience when there's a clash between government's wishes and the laws of your God, whichever God that happened to be. Margaret Thatcher, in her world tour, the tour which was called the New World Order, spoke at Massey Hall about this, about the coming wars in the early 90s, and she said it would be against religious fundamentalists. Now, she meant the Muslims, of course, but she also meant all religionists. And I mean all fundamental religionists. That's Catholic and Protestant and Jews and Muslims, everyone. The only ones that would be exempt were the passive ones, like Buddhism, because it falls right in line, Buddhism, with the new agenda for the UN of an evolutionary kind of religion. Evolution is not incompatible with Buddhism or even Hinduism. You'll find evolution came from Hinduism because that was always the higher religion of the mystery religion. In Hinduism, they start off with the primordial slime and amoebas and things that grow out of it, simply evolving through the will of Brahma to become something better and better. They actually call this evolution becoming. It's called becoming. Freemasonry is modeled after Hinduism. And Charles Darwin's whole theory, which was just taken from his grandfather before him, on the theory of evolution, was a reiteration, a public reiteration, of the higher Freemasonic religion that already existed. It was an expose of it. It was also intended to be the first step to de-secretize human beings, to get them to start to give up their thinking that they were something special, that life was something special, that others around you were sacred in a way, since everything was made by some great creator. Once you threw that out the window, put yourself in line with the animals, it was much easier to control you and justify why they were controlling you. You had less rights then to stand up for and say, wait a minute, I'm a human being. I'm a creation. No, you're just a fluke of nature. That's all you are, they tell you. And you believe it, and you've just thrown away the only defense you ever had against them. When we begin to kill at any extreme, whether it's the very young or the very old, and they always go for the weaker ones first, and we accept that as a culture, how can we possibly stand up to the elite when they say, well, there's just too many of you, you're inconvenient, you're in the way. We have no arguments, we have no leg to stand on. And that was their planning all along. In academia, many topics are allowed to be discussed, which cannot be discussed in public. And I understand why not, because some of the topics are so emotive, people could become violent over them. In academia, you must become, to an extent, dispassionate and stand above and look at something from the outside. Just look at the effects, as the elite themselves do and their think tanks do. When you start at the abortion end of the scale, for many, many reasons, inconvenience, can't afford them, again, there's economics for you, or the very fact that you have promiscuity or whatever it happens to be. The fact is, if you kill off life because it's just unwanted at the moment, or it can't be afforded at the moment, how can we stand up when they start killing off the elderly or want to kill off all the rest of the useless eaters that don't have factories anymore, they don't have the economies anymore, we're excess population. We've lost our ground for our arguments. And this was a cleverly planned agenda to make this so. Ancient religions, long before they were tampered with so heavily for political reasons, always reinforced that, the sacredness of life, knowing that if it was thrown out the window, hell would break loose by controllers. And the worst tragedy is, today we're so selfish, so incredibly selfish, in the me generation, we don't care about other people. We don't care what's happening to other people, whether it's wedding parties in Iraq who get bombed from the air by mistake, supposedly, or people dying because they can't afford medical treatment. And all of these things in this great society, that most advanced society we've ever had, we're told, the most progressed society, if we don't care about these people, then believe you me, the big eating machine that goes around chomping at people will come round to your door in the end. You can't escape it. I generally go into much more deep topics to try and show the public that everything they take for granted is not only a lie, but a projected lie, a planned lie, a thought-out lie, a thought-out reality, in fact. We are molded into our way of thinking. If you look at original thinking, I was mentioning psychiatry just before. Original thinking is that it happens to feelings and your emotions. As soon as you go into educational, original thinking is discouraged. And then you're given ready-made thoughts put right into your heads. It's easy to do with young children. And young children are very curious about the world. Very curious. They want to know why things work, why things are the way they are. They want to see it from different points of view. They'll ask questions. You'll think they're annoying you. They're not really. They're looking at different aspects of the same topic. They want to know for themselves. They want to know truth as well. Because if you know truth, it's the safest way to orientate themselves in a strange world. A world that has power in it, to the sense. They're not taken seriously, and no matter where this attitude takes them, if it takes the form of a disrespect, of the subtle, even condescension, which is usual towards all who have no power, such as young children or older sick people. But they're taught in school primarily to accept ready-made thought, ready-made answers, standardized answers, and that's the key to all of this, is standardization. In the higher Masonic traditions, they talk about the standard. The standard is the flag that's put into a hole in the ground at the beginning of battles. That means that the land have taken over, or shortly will take over, is going to be standardized under their system. They are standardizing the whole planet right now under one system. They have decided that all of the junk genes, which the commoners are made up of, apparently, have no chance to evolve any further. And that all of those who've evolved the highest levels are already in positions of power, or at least helping those in positions of power. Darwin and others even discussed the possibility of this happening. This religion of theirs called evolution. H.G. Wells, a man who put a lot of non-fiction works out there, disclosed a lot of their thoughts. He was a worker for them. He also admired Plato's Republic, which he called the blueprint for the coming utopia, the utopia of the elites. You'll find this particular book is mentioned often with many of the big players in this agenda. Going over some of the reality behind the illusions in this world, the illusions which have become our normalcy. We've been taught that everything is normal. And it must be normal, isn't it? Because if you look at your neighbors and everyone around you, they'll all have the same opinions as you, because they all get it from the same sources. In fact, the technique of opinion creation is so perfect today, is a perfect science. They will always bring you to what you think are your conclusions by the data and the technique of transmitting it to you. I was talking about children and how they're indoctrinated and how spontaneity, really creativity, is drummed out of them at school, because that leads to individuality. A very, very important topic, because the elite have said that they must eradicate the problem of the individual. This elite, remember, and their ancestors guided the world through thousands of years where the collective was the norm under the religions that they mandated for them. The whole idea of individuality is a fairly recent phenomena. Before that, it was areas and habitats and groupthink, towns and villages. And you conformed to the system, or you were shunned by the system. It wasn't until really the beginning of the 1800s that the whole idea of individual thought could be very, very important, in fact. If you look at small children, you will often see spontaneity coming out of them. They have an ability to feel and think, which is really theirs. It's personally theirs. Not because they've been told to respond in a certain way to this or that situation. And the spontaneity will show what they say and what they think, and in the feelings that are expressed in their faces and in their drawings and so on. If you ask what makes for the attraction small children have for most people, it's really that, apart from sentimental and conventional reasons, the answer must be that it is the sound quality of the spontaneity that attracts us. It's something that we are supposed to have ourselves, but it's been drummed out of us. Life in this system, which is anti-human, tends to drive it out of you. It makes people dead. And the sad thing is, you find so many people, when they hit about 50 years of age, become desperate. They're saddened, they're deadened to this world, which they can't really understand. They're fed up with the worry and the scurry and the tensions and the fears of poverty, losing their job, losing their family, which they generally do today, and so on. And they become dead, and they look forward to getting a pension and retiring. It's like a runner going through the tape. If I can just get through there, I'll get my pension and retire, and I'll be out of this rat race for a while. That's what they hope for. And what a sad ambition for so many people, to look forward to retiring, because we know once we retire, we get older and sicker, especially in this day and age with all inoculations we've had and the rotten food that's genetically modified to serve that purpose, to make us even worse. And you won't live real long, so you won't have much time to enjoy anything. And with the cost of living going up by the magic wand of the man at the top, you can't relax even then. Life is drummed out of people. The spontaneity, the creativity of individualism is under incredible attack. In the industrial era, we saw the rise of what they called, from the feudal system and the collective to the mass man. The mass man, even though he thought he was an individual, really was conforming to one or other groups that were laid out before him to join. And from that, we have the mass indoctrinations, the mass agenda for the masses today. Please look into my website at Cutting Through the Matrix, where I go into a lot of this amazing matrix that we do live in, with different levels of it, how we have gotten to where we are, and where we're supposed to go from here if we allow it, and what the consequences will be. Lots of stuff for free. And you can take the transcripts as well and download those and pass them out to people you know. Don't expect miracles, because we're living in a time of choices where people are, wittingly or otherwise, choosing the future for themselves. The choice not to know is a choice. We have to respect that. People are choosing, many people like this world of slavery. They like this world where the slave is guaranteed X amount of dollars every week and can buy their little rewards from China that don't last very long, but then they can buy more the following week or the following month. They like the idea that there are these special people above them who are managing all the severe and heavy, weighty problems of the world for them. That gives them time to play, and to mix and socialize, and talk trivia to each other, and smile and sip wine and laugh. What we're down to in this day and age is a battle for the individual self. We understand that if you lose selfhood, individuality, you go into a state of masochism. And this is what fascism is based on, sadomasochism. The sadist and the psychopathic sadist worship power. They worship power for power's sake. They detest anything which is weak. And they will tell you in many ways of how they hate the weak. People are not allowed to be sick. There's something wrong with them if they're sick. You'll hear this said, in fact, in conversation. Power is the key. And George Orwell, who wrote 1984 in 1948, the actual title of the book was going to be called The Last Man, but his publisher chose that the actual 1984 is a reversal of the year it was published. But he said, but he's been tortured by O'Brien. O'Brien would have no problem getting employment today in a high government level with all of his techniques and knowledge. But O'Brien said, in answer to Winston's query as to why they did it, when they already had everything you could possibly want, and O'Brien said, power. Just for power's sake. Unending power, you see. It's hard for normal people. In fact, it's really impossible for normal people to imagine this kind of mentality. That's why they get away with it. They look like us. No, they're not reptilian. No, they're not Nephilim or anything else. They're psychopathic human beings. And we better understand what psychopathy is, and it's not difficult. Go into the books, study it. Study the ego side of the psychopath, and you'll find that sadomasochism is a tremendous part of it. You'll find in all big military regimes, the officer corps worship the people above them, and they're sadistic to those beneath below them. They worship power. They'll do anything they're told by their leader or their master, the one who's achieved ultimate power. This is a system that's been brought in today, which will have control over all of us. So the annihilation of the individual self and the attempt to overcome the unbearable feeling of powerlessness are only one side of masochistic strivings. And then the other side is the attempt to become a part of a bigger and more powerful whole outside of yourself, and to submerge yourself and participate in it. In other words, a much more powerful group. This power can show the form of a person, or an institution, or a god, or the nation, or conscience even, or a psychic compulsion. By becoming really part of a power, which is felt as much stronger than anything else around you, something that's eternal and even glamorous at times, you participate in that kind of thing, and you'll feel its strength and its glory. If you find people who were around Hitler with his speeches, they always said that even though they didn't believe initially when they walked in the philosophy of Nazism, and Nazism was not just a national thing, don't believe that for a minute, that's a cover. It was an elitist international doctrine, which simply started with National Socialism. The people who went in and heard Hitler speak talked about how hypnotized, how caught up they were in the raw emotion of this man that was felt by the group all around the man, And it was the kind of hysteria almost that you will see if you're on a stage in a rock group, where you know you have the crowd in the palm of your hand and you can sway them in any direction you want. It's much the same technique. But sadomasochism comes in to the worship of the all-powerful leader that promises you utopias and better futures to come. It's always strange to find that going through history, they never materialize. In fact, when you fight for something to overthrow a terrible power, you often find you end up with a worse one in its place. It's because it's the same power that's still in control. It's just changed hats, because the sadomasochists, those who worship power above them and hate the weaker below them, are still in charge because they belong to all sides, all groups, in all eras. They used to be called in ancient times the deviant creation, because their whole world is a form of deviant thinking. They must dominate to control, and they cannot leave anyone else in peace. Again, difficult for the average person to comprehend, because hopefully the average person doesn't want to dominate and control those around them. You will still see it, because I do believe, just from my own observations, that there are just as many psychopaths at the top and all down through the strata of society, down to the bottom level. In books dealing with pathocracy, that's reigned by psychopaths and dynasties of psychopaths. Pathocracy shows you that the pathocrats will give you a psychopathic culture. So even the ordinary people at least will try and emulate the psychopaths by their lifestyles and by their behavior. It's only when it comes to the nitty-gritty, would you kill mass amounts of people to go further, that the normal person will have their choices kick in, and hopefully they will say no. In a system of winners and losers, and that's all you see now on television, where you have the stars, the super rich, the wealthy, the Donald Trumps, all these, the Bill Gates, the people who you're trained to believe made it by themselves, but they didn't, you see. They were allowed to come up there. In fact, they were groomed to come up. You don't get into those positions of power unless the doors are opened by the big boys above you. But we are taught to worship them. They've made it. They've become stars. What do they have that we don't in this world of terror and fear? They have no wants anymore of poverty. They have no fear of becoming sick and being unable to get the best treatment. All of those worries are taken away from them, and so the public are taught to worship them. They call them the stars. The Hollywood stars is the Hollywood, remember. It comes from the Hollywood that was the staff of the ancient wizardry. You'll even find that in different Bibles and different holy books. They used to call it a holy day, and the holly itself is the green wood, evergreen. It gives the leaves in the winter time too. Look at the old Christmas carol, the holly and the ivy, because there's an occult meaning behind it going and predates Christianity. That's the staff of the Hollywood. Mickey Mouse has his little wand of Hollywood, which waves the magic spell over the people and distorts a reality into a different reality, a fictional one, which we all follow. The stars are all in the culture creation industry. They give you, through fictional forms, your downloading, your emotional imprinting, your viewpoints on things. Because when you're being entertained, it never dawns on you that you're being indoctrinated, because your shields are down when you're being entertained. If you go to hear a lecture on something, your shields are up, and so you can analyze each sentence as it's said and dismiss it or accept it. It's up to you. But through entertainment, with the storyline, and with you always identifying with the hero, if you're the male, or the heroine, if you're the female, ancient techniques, you will follow everything they do, including the things you might not necessarily like. You're being given new ways of doing through entertainment, you're being filled with predictive programming, as they call it, in Tavistock Institute in London, which is really the world's premier place for mind control and psychopolitics, and even the psychopolitics in geopolitics for different cultures. We are living in a big laboratory, a laboratory where everything which is introduced to us is discussed at big think tanks before we even see or hear it. Or when Miss Jackson's breast was exposed at the Rose Bowl, as the Masons do for males, the fire went on behind her, the big Masonic idea. And you didn't know, did you? Alan Watt back, standing in for Charles Giuliani. And I believe we have a call from the Netherlands. Are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Yes. Who are you?
I'm Walter from the Netherlands.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well.
Well, I first want to thank you for filling in for Charles. It's always a pleasure listening to your calm voice explaining the dire situation. I want to ask you one thing and then I'm going to hang up fast. I was wondering if you could comment on the current crash that appears to be happening on the market and if you see a global crash coming. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, Walter, the
I'm going to hang up now. Bye.
Bye now. I'll answer that. Yeah, we have we've gone through this before with the supposed crashes and so on. Remember, everything else, again, in the system is pretty phony, and that the price of anything is just an idea. But when you have middlemen coming in to fix prices and those who deal with real estate who simply inflate everything out of all proportion in regards of the materials in a particular house or property or whatever, then you've got a business taking over. And whenever you have a business, you never have any kind of reality involved in it anymore. You have a game going on for higher profits, so they can manipulate markets up and down like a yo-yo. The only real estate, and this is a very important part, real estate always really meant the land itself, not so much the buildings that were on the land. And they've trained us all, since they got us into cities, etc., to start thinking in real estate as being actually a home. A home is nothing at all, really. It's just a bunch of sticks or bricks. Bricks are preferable. And that's the old story in masonry of the straw house, the wooden house, and the brick house. In other words, real estate was really the brick house. But yes, it can be manipulated. And there's no doubt that in the future, step by step, but not suddenly, I believe, they will bring down the value of everything as they start to get us all into the habitat areas, because they've told us that the United Nations, through the Agenda 21 program, that's the agenda for the 21st century, that by the end of the century, now it could be the middle of the century, who knows, it could be 20 years from now, they are going to train the public into this new system of living in habitats, and they have stated categorically there will be no private property. It will not be allowed. It will be rental only, because they plan to withhold the credits for your rent if you go against the system. So they must eliminate private property to a step-by-step process. I'm sure they will bring us through two or three major crashes and then introduce a new system of government supplement, probably initially, and then the introduction of rental accommodation only for a new age. And they'll tell us all of these reasons. All the experts will come on over a period of 2 or 3 years to convince us of the necessity of changing our whole way of thinking and doing. But right at the moment, I'm not too worried. The US will probably bring it down faster, because the US, as they said in their own books and materials, as they finish off the last part of their mission, which is to bring the Middle East under control and convince all the residents of the Middle East of the necessity of joining the big global club, as they pay for all of this, their economy is to come down and their real estate business and so on will suffer first. I think Europe is much safer for a little while longer. So I hope that answers your question. If anyone else wants to call in, we can take calls for the next half hour or so. Meanwhile, I'll continue talking about this. This is what I'm saying about perception versus reality. Nothing in the system is what you think it is, including the value of things. Value is an idea. Anything in old times that was truly valuable was something which you used and was utterly necessary. But when you create a new perception of value where someone else decides what something is worth, you have stepped outside that initial definition. In old times, a tool was valuable, a saw was valuable. It was something you could create a home from or with. But when other third parties come in and deal with real estate and gauge the prices out of existence to get a bigger cut, then you're in an artificial system, the same as the money system, the banking system, and you've lost all control. It's your decisions and the value is made by other people, even though, as I say, a price is just an idea. The difference being they're taking your right to make the idea away from you and put it into the hand of a supposed expert. And I believe we have another caller, Ted from Georgia, on the line. Are you there, Ted?
Yes, Alan. I've been watching the CNBC, I believe they call it, this theater about the stock market. And they would have you to believe, in, not necessarily today, but they would, their whole outlook on the market is that it's spontaneous, that it's a market economy. Market system. And yet, it's completely rigged, and now, today and yesterday, it's becoming obvious that it's completely rigged.
Yeah.
We have the Fed bailing out the market, and of course the Fed, while it is a private institution, it is outside what we recognize as being the government. And yet it is a part of the ruling apparatus.
Yeah.
And I know you agree with me on these things, but I'm trying to get them into a better perspective for us.
Yeah.
And that is that it is a part of what I think Gorbachev in his book, I think he's written two, but in the one that I read, and I forget the name of it, but he recognized it as being a form of socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And you referred to that, you alluded to that a while ago.
Yeah, he wrote in a book, it's called Towards a New Civilization, some references to the new system of the combination of capitalism and communism that would be brought in to the West. And that was, along with that, was the elimination through a series of events. He didn't specify what events would be of bringing in rental accommodation. And of course, he said it was to serve the masses much better. So he was alluding to the fact that eventually private property would be done away with, and we're seeing it beginning to happen. This has always been their intention, is to house everyone in habitat areas. Now, the real estate organizations, interestingly enough, and they have big organizations of these sharks who have got together. And they're touting that this whole habitat strategy for the United Nations is the best boon they've ever had for themselves. And they're building big, high-class type habitat areas with super modern homes for what will eventually be the bureaucratic elite that runs the system for the true elite. And they think this is a wonderful chance for themselves, while the rest of the public, just as it happened in Britain during the Industrial Age, they drove all the peasantry off the land into these thrown-up, cheaply built cities like Manchester, Birmingham, and so on. It's the same strategy recurring again, is to get the rest of us all off into the major cities, which will become overcrowded and disease-ridden and so on. They've written about this. That is the strategy. It's not a pleasant picture, but I'm not here to sugarcoat things. I'm here to tell people like it is. So, yes, you're quite right. It's an artificially driven system. When you're not in charge of your own property, or its value or anything else, then you are powerless to resist it. Someone else is in charge. Unseen forces, unseen faces, you don't even know their names. In fact, there's so many layers of them dealing with you all the time, and most folk don't even realize it. It's no different from Rothschild getting up every morning, sticking his finger out the window, deciding which way the wind blows, and putting the value on the price of gold. It's the same thing. It's outside your hands, or a bunch that meets in the Bank of Canada, which is just a floor in a building where representatives from the major lenders meet with an appointee from the government to decide what the value of the dollar will be. It's the same con game. We have never had freedom, definitely not in the financial sector, and they knew a long time ago they'd have to take away the real estate sector as well. So yeah, you're quite right there.
Well, the main point I want to make, and of course it's a struggle by the elite to subjugate the masses,
mm-hmm.
and to manipulate the masses,
yep.
and to manipulate them with information where possible, but with force when necessary.
Yeah.
But I call it, I adhere to Mr. Gorbachev's idea that it is socialism, and I call it private socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Federal Reserve comes in. It's private, but it is a part of the effective government.
Oh, absolutely.
The media is privately owned,
yep.
but it is a part of the effective government.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the media is an essential part, is an essential arm of government. In fact, used to have the three estates, heavenly, temporal, and ministerial, and they added on to it the fourth estate, which is the media. That's an official part of the 20th century dogma. The media is an essential part of governance, absolutely.
Would you mind repeating that?
Yes, I'm saying that you used to have the three estates, and that was your god and power, spiritual and temporal, meaning all the way down to a king or an elite. And that was always in the dictionaries as the three estates, they called it.
And
now they've added the fourth estate, which is the media. That is officially in the dictionary in Oxford, because the media is an essential arm of government.
The media is of the essence mm-hmm. in this system they're imposing upon us.
That's right.
If we can expose the media, mm-hmm. to the yes. extent that we expose the media as not being in the interest of the people, but in mm-hmm. the interest of the elite,
yeah.
then to that extent we can neutralize them.
Yeah.
And prevent them from running roughshod over us.
Yes, the media is so effective, especially since television was given out, to indoctrinate the people into false perceptions, which become the reality. Perceptions become reality, you see, how it's presented to you. And whole nations have been trained and weaned and brought up on television with the same main news anchors people for their whole lives.
I consider that the television hypnotizes
uh-huh.
its addicts.
Yep.
And you alluded to that, I think, mm-hmm. Recently.
Yeah.
By saying an ad, it took eight exposures, I believe you said,
mm-hmm.
to solidify it in the mind of the observer.
Yeah, it takes at least eight repetitions of even a simple advertisement or a term like weapons of mass destruction
that's for the
public to
yes.
remember that and start parroting it themselves. That's the trick. After the eighth one, the public themselves will parrot those terms, those slogans, in conversation with each other. Yeah.
Right. Horrified hypnocritters, and the hypnocritters, what most people call sheeple, the people that have been hypnotized by the media.
Yeah.
And they are led to believe that what's not in their interest is in their interest.
Yeah.
In what's in the interest of the elite that controls the media.
Yeah.
Is in the interest of the television viewer, which is normally not the case.
Yeah, television, I mean, even television with its 60 hertz cycles and its flicker rate and all the rest of it was designed to be hypnotic. And it's always been understood this. It is an hypnotic instrument, and it's more easily observed with young children who will sit in front of it and their mouths will just drop open and they'll stare at it. And when the parents try to talk to the children don't hear them. They literally don't hear them. They're hypnotized. But you all see, so see adults who are hypnotized too. Now, most main news comes on late at night now. It used to be earlier, around 5 or 6 p.m., but the Tavistock Institute did a lot of studies and surveys and found out that when a person's tired, around 10, 11 p.m. at night, that was the best time to give them their propaganda through news. And that's why you have it late on now, because you're in a semi-hypnotic state already. You're tired, and you go right into that deep stage of hypnosis, and you're downloaded with all this data. Your sensor part of your mind is down completely, and you don't critically think about anything you're being told, but your subconscious will remember it, and you will repeat those terms that are instilled into you so carefully. In the following day at work, you'll actually repeat the slogans they give you and the terminology they give you.
When you're tired and relaxed, then you are more prone to suspend judgment.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Well, so nice to talk with you.
It's a pleasure. Yeah, it's an interesting thing that a Canadian show was following up the members, the shareholders of Hollinger Corporation, one of the big newspaper and media chains that was owned by Conrad Black, who was knighted and made a lord, Lord Conrad Black. He's in the news right now over some scandals, but I think he'll get off with it because he cannot be tried by ordinary people, because in a court of law, you must be tried by your peer group, which means he'd have to be tried by other lords. And also, you find that the other members were seen going into the Hollinger meeting. And Barbara Walters and all these other news anchor people, well-known ones, were all top shareholders in it. So here's the shareholders giving you the news. They're not just anchor people. They're actually members of it, too. So we have other callers on the line. Who do we have here? Okay, we've got Daniel in British Columbia.
Okay, Alan, great to talk to you. Cade Miliforte.
Ah, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's great that RBN now seems to have its resident philosopher.
I'm just filling in at the moment, spontaneously, as you might say. I'm trying not to go into spontaneous combustion.
No, please. But no, seriously, it's great to get, you know, your level of analysis and insight onto the network. But I, if you'll allow me just for a moment, I'd like to play a bit of devil's advocate. I would say, to the contrary, that perception is reality, and
yeah.
Reality in quotation marks, because what reality is a very, very extensive study. But on that score, what I would quote Kant, when he said that we cannot know the thing itself.
Yeah.
So that we actually live in a mythic realm. The very self, the persona, the ego, the psyche is mythic.
Yeah.
And so the best we can do at this point, it seems to me, is to create a more viable, better myth.
Mm-hmm.
You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. See, Kant himself borrowed heavily from both Luther and Calvin. And Calvin's idea was a form of predestination, which was to submerge the individual into the mass under that very pretense that you could never understand everything, so give up your will to a god or a deity. And Kantian philosophy came after that with the same basic idea. However, this has been vastly...
But he did say that lamp must have his God.
Yes, but we find again that the big institutes which took over, as psychiatry got involved and psychology got involved, with behavioral psychology on a mass scale, they found more and more techniques to influence people's perceptions of things and actually use the way that they do perceive, the way the mechanics of perception go into action. They can actually influence and guarantee the outcomes of the perception. And this is the problem today. The Marshall McLuhan Center was heavily used by the CIA and other intelligence agencies because they were going into how perceptions are created.
But I happen to be a Canadian, and I read Marshall as a young man. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this happened, if it did, after his death.
Well, even during his life, I know.
Well, you're saying that Marshall McLuhan was a CIA operative or agent?
Not an operative, but you see, they also got funding. Even the universities, you understand, get funding through agencies and foundations along certain lines, and McLuhan knew perfectly well. I mean, he knew Professor O'Driscoll that died a few years ago and other ones, and there's some professors still alive that knew him very well. And McLuhan was well aware that some of these ideas could be abused by these agencies and that they
okay, Alan, I hear the music, so I'll just say goodbye and thanks. It was great to talk to you. Keep up the good work.
I will do. Pleasure to speak to you. I'm Alan Watt, standing in for Charles Giuliani, and I believe we've got one last caller on the line. We'll have to make it very short. It's John from Kentucky. Are you there, John?
How you doing?
Not so bad.
Hey, I'm enjoying your show. It's the first time I ever heard it.
Uh-huh.
And I think the best thing people do with MTV is just carry them out the front door and kick them off the front porch.
I agree.
I got rid of mine about 15 years ago and quit all that Christmas and all that other stuff, and it's really changed my life. But after I quit watching TV, I can't stand to watch it now.
That's right.
I mean, it's just like you. Once you figure out it's all a big bunch of BS. But what I really want to get to real fast is to prove people TV's behind it all, and I don't think we'd have to fire a shot to mm-hmm. take our country back here in the U.S. if we just throw the TVs away.
Yeah,
I believe that's what would wake everybody up, take our land back and everything. But in Alaska, the Eskimos, the federal government tried to buy their steel, their resources up there, and they never would sell for years and years. And then one day they talked them into taking one TV, and within a year, most of them had five or six TVs. They all quit hunting and wasted their money on four-wheelers and all that stuff and ruined the whole society.
Yeah, television was designed.
I just want to tell you you're doing a good job, but are you religious of anything?
In a certain different way than most people, if you've studied religions. But the television definitely has been the greatest tool to destroy the communication between people to converse themselves and share their own opinions and viewpoints. You're quite right. It's addictive. It's very addictive.
Yes, it is.
And if you're away from
illusion
it,
and another thing.
Yeah.
Even if you can get the message across to people, it seems like they know it when you leave your house.
Uh-huh.
It, in two or three days of back out there in their house and the TV stuff, they completely forget what she's even talking about. They're back on the same train.
Yep, absolutely, yep.
Hey, Dad, you're doing a good job. First time I've ever listened to you. Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you again. And I'll be filling in as well today in a couple of hours for John Stadtmiller for 2 hours. So tune in again, and we'll carry on this discussion. Just to end this little part here, the previous caller talked about Kant and Kantian ethics and economics and so on, where Kant said that you could never know everything. But remember, Kant came out of the mass man's era when they were talking about individuality and what was it and how much power did it have. The later philosophers even took it further and said that individuality was everything, and that without individuality there would be no true creations within the world. No guideposts, no lights to guide people into more freedom. The mass man, unfortunately, which is conditioned today to be a mass man, is very easily manipulated by the major stream medias, and that's our problem. The Enlightenment talked about sapere aude, which was to dare to know. Dare to know. Ask the questions. Dare to know. Even though you don't like the answers, you've got to ask the questions, because only then will you start making decisions according to your conscience. and one, that's all you have. That's your relation to your deity, in fact, is your conscience. What is right and what is wrong, according to you, not by the standards you're taught by society, but what does your conscience tell you? We're living in a time when many of those at the top have no conscience. They are psychopathic, and we must overcome them while we have a chance. I hear the music coming, so that's me for this particular show. Tune in later. I'll stand in for John Stadmiller. All the best for now.